Okay, so welcome to another episode. Simon Says, we have Lyra here today.
Hello.
And Lyra, we just did an episode on Donald Trump with the Iowa primary, right? Mm. The Iowa caucuses. And we are like, you know, we're going to do occasional American coverage and then coming back to local coverage. But then the whole primary went into like a hyperdrive development and we thought of doing a follow-up episode on that. And of course, subsequent to the Iowa primary, they went to New Hampshire, DeSantis dropped out, and Trump won huge again. And now so many Republican big names are coming out and say, let's just end the primary. I mean, we have never seen a primary end after two rounds. So what do you... You know, there was one huge story about how a former president never come back so strongly at the primary. What do you make of Trump's strong support?
I mean, it's just super interesting because most of the time, you expect a dropout. Most mm-hmm. of the time, you don't expect a strong return. And yet, this is like a comeback sort of campaign that was being launched. And he really was very, very focused, very, very much energized by the whole Republican base. And you begin to think, why is there such a huge support?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when the media is really just reporting day after day on his indictment of the things that he did, like January 6th incitement, all those sort of things. And yet people could somewhat see maybe there's like illegal immigrants sort of issues,
mm-hmm.
some benefits from him, but they didn't really see him like really securing the borders per se if you really just consume mainstream media news outlet. But here he is. I mean, coming back stronger than ever. And you really want to like study mm-hmm. his fiscal policy, his border policy. And I think what he did was he stayed true to make America great again.
Yep.
And that is really the beauty of the whole thing. And you see such a huge amount of freedom that people could choose whichever way that they want to go through. At the end of the day, your choice matters, the accountability matters, and he has proven to be one that delivers his work.
Yeah, Lyra, I think you really sum out, you know, what we wanted to talk about today, because, you know, after the early rounds, I just felt like we needed to do one episode to kind of maybe explain and discuss a little bit on his appeal, Donald Trump's appeal. Because everywhere I go, especially in Malaysia, people know Donald Trump, but they will be like, he's still around. He's still.
Barack Obama is around as well.
Yeah, but Trump is not just around. He is like in a very, very strong position, and you won't get that kind of understanding and insight if you are just reading the mainstream media news. And that's one of the first thing I want to discuss. You know, what are the people not getting at? Because I mean, we talk about fake news for the last 6, 7, 8 years already. But the general person in Malaysia, I guess they'll be reading, you know, Associated Press, they'll be reading CNN, Wall Street Journal, snippets of New York Times. But they don't get the right picture, right?
No, they don't.
And maybe, you know, before we even talk about the historical comparison, because maybe let's talk about that, because Malaysia, we kind of go through the same. Remember when the opposition was gaining strength, and we talk about one of the most pivotal moments, 308, where, you know, four or five states shifted hands and Putrajaya was handed, not defeated in federal level, but there was a huge kind of gain by the opposition. And then you start to have the alternate media, those that, as you remember, now the defunded Malaysia Insider, Malaysia Kini, all those things. Then you start to have the comparison between the new media and the old media. And that's where we get the name legacy media.
Mm.
So every time you hear the word legacy media, it's not like you are outdated, or maybe you are outdated, but you are the old, the establishment. And I just think about the reporting of Bursay. That's one of the easiest comparison, because those say the establishment media, New Straits Times, Utu Sang will say, oh, maybe 1,000 people attended. Then in Malaysia Kini will say, well, we estimated 40,000. you know, this kind of disparity, then they'll show the video, the wide angle shot, you decide. So this kind of situation is nothing new, right?
No.
And so we're seeing the same thing happening right now. So I think where you get your news is really, really important.
I mean, we live in a day of really social media.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we consume, first thing that you do in the morning, TikTok or Instagram, if all that you read, all that you... I guess what you consume is who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just daily consume this and without verifying, I think these days people really just lost the interest of having to verify certain facts. I mean, even like Israel-Hamas sort of news. Yep. I mean, that's the clearest example. Some people will be like, oh no, you don't consume news ever from Western media because they are pro-Israel. So hence, everything that they read, they must be giving you the narrative.
Yep.
But what says like certain news outlet like Al Jazeera, I mean, they are also spreading some sort of propaganda. So how do we get the balance in all these sort of things?
Yeah, that's really challenging. Now, in the old days, of course, you have news and you have opinion. But these days, of course, opinion is sort of weaved into the whole news. And I mean, for me, one of the telltale signs will be I'm going to focus more on direct quotation. Now, of course, even with video, you get creative editing and things like that. It does take some effort to try to differentiate the truth. And I think in terms of what's happening out there, I mean, we get another whole cycle with COVID where people just change the goalposts all the time. So we have been through this. And I mean, going back again to the American example, I mean, we talk about Iowa and New Hampshire where Trump just did so well. And I think it's really because people are starting to see past the lies of the legacy media. And one of the factors, now, according to conservative commentator Charlie Kurt, he said one of the hip's observation was that it is due to Elon Musk liberating X. And now remember, X, formerly known as Twitter, used to be an echo chamber for the progressive, for the libtard, you know, whatever you want to call them. And it's just like they are just an elite discussion. It's like, I'm just comforting you. I'm just reaffirming you. That's basically Twitter. And so every time you get conservative or you get MAGA, you know, Make America Great Again, you get some opinion which is against their narrative, you'll be kicked out, you'll be shadow banned. So that was really Twitter. But then when Musk took over, he started to allow the conservative to remain. Now, he didn't kick out anyone, yes, they still ban here and there, they still have their code of conduct. But all of a sudden, you allow different points of view. You have competition. We always say competition is important because competition allows the viewer to decide. So Kurt say that this was one of the critical elements that allows a more robust discussion about democracy. That's why New Hampshire is considered one of the most independent-leaning states. And in recent years, they become more liberal, they become more progressive. Yet, record number of voters came out for Trump. More than even Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
So, what does that tell you? That tells me that people want honesty. People want competition. They are really disgusted when the Democrats try to took Trump's name out from the ballot. Now, that's another discussion for another time. But it's like, when you cannot win a competition, you try to disqualify on technicality. So that's the thing that is happening. But Lyra, I want to ask, maybe, you know, we have said a few times already, look, we are not going to tell you what to think. We are not going to say you should have this kind of opinion. But I do hear people from time to time still ask, where do you find the source of independent and fair media? Maybe you can share a little bit.
Well, I mean, you have certain people like what you mentioned, Charlie Kirk or even Steve Bannon. They offer great insight, but yet you see the way that they process news. I mean, they are quite holistic in their approach in terms of they are reading not just from certain conservative leaning media only, or I mean, because you want to get a holistic view of the whole thing, you have to hear both sides of the story. So what they did was they dissect it all for you And actually, it begins to reinstate, I would say reinstate common sense into how you're processing certain things. So these are great sources, I would say. But these are really a picture of like citizen journalists.
Mm-hmm.
I think what they did was, I mean, obviously, you also have the bias of citizen journalists because obviously they are going to give that opinion. I guess you just have to learn how to chew the meat and throw out the bone in that sense. So meaning you look at the opinion piece and how well have they been consistent in their delivery, you know? If they have always been super liberal-leaning. I mean, you can look at it, yet you look at it with an objective perspective without bashing them, without being judgmental. I think that is always the objective view that we have to undertake. Whichever news that you're reading, I mean, it could be as liberal as it gets or as mainstream as it gets. At the end of the day, you just read. You have to learn to read between the lines and really just see, oh, make a comparison. If all the news outlets are saying the same thing, you have to think, hey, what are they not telling you?
Yeah, I mean, it was really, really bad, especially in the 2020 election cycle, and everyone is saying the same thing, January 6th, insurrection and things like that. But I do feel a little bit of shift right now because there are some people, even in established legacy media, that kind of can feel the pulse of change. And now, what you said was really useful and helpful, I think. Another way for me is really to look at people who might not necessarily have the same opinion, you know. So I'm looking at the more liberal people and how sometimes even their opinion shifted. I mean, we just talk about Joe Rogan, for example.
Or Russell Brand.
Russell Brand. And you have, I was just thinking about Rolling Stones reporter Mike Tybee, ex-Guardian, Glenn Greenwald. These are progressive, liberal to the core, but now they are calling out their legacy media as faker and liar. So it's always interesting. Now, of course, people will say, oh, you are turncoat, you have shifted the side, but I don't think so because, I mean, Greenwald, for example, he is still very, very liberal. He's still for his LGBT kind of things, but in terms of government control, news manipulation, he was very, very much against what Biden administration is doing in cohort with all the media. So it does take a bit of effort, I guess. Just like in Malaysia, it's the same, right? You want to read. I mean, just use one example. Malaysia Kini is a paywall, and from time to time, it will be free. But if you really want to have access and even to the archive, you need to pay. So there is a price. But what do you think about influencer kind of news? Because we talk about how a lot of people consume news through social media these days, more than direct news outlet.
Yeah, I mean, there's just tongues out there.
Mm.
I mean,
Do you think people are persuaded by the influencer that... But of course, in the first place, not all influencers are media savvy. You know, maybe they are into entertainment, they are into short culture or gaming or streaming. But I'm talking about influencer in terms of news cycle, in terms of media, in terms of political news. I mean, you definitely have, we just mentioned Charlie Kirk, Steve Bannon. On the conservative side, you have Rogan, you have Tybee, all those from the liberal side. But what do you make of all this? I mean, they have follower, they have influence, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the easiest example to give is when you look at sports.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of NBA players, they were very much into BLM.
Yep, yep.
They kneel down, show their solidarity with BLM movement and things like that. And you begin to see the ratings drop.
Mm.
The NBA ratings drop like crazy, crazy low. And you begin to think, hey, actually, we're not here to
That's
see
not
you
your
preach.
Job, right? I mean, they are not an expert in this arena. I mean, you just went to a Coldplay's concert, right? And you say one of the things you really appreciate was that they are not preachy.
I mean, there are certain things like the pride flag that was being shown, which some people could... I mean, we have seen people just walking off because they disagree with the values and it's completely fine. And yet they are not being super preachy about it. It's just like if you if you don't really pay attention to it, it's almost like it's just a show, a performance, that's all. And I think that is what we are paying them for. We are not here to listen to another LGBTQ message. I mean, obviously we know the differences and things like that, but we don't need to hear yet another message or even some NBA players that are just preaching about like BLM things. I think one of the thing about what I think I remember what you have mentioned very, very early on, even with like football, you hardly see anyone, any footballers that demonstrated their
position. It is more prevalent in the American professional league. Like BLM, for example, in NBA and NFL, it was very rampant, but then they tried to do it with EPL, football we call it, American call it soccer. And I think the EPL authority immediately shut down and say you cannot show expression or support for BLM. You cannot kneel down. We do not allow it. So, I mean, you are paid to do sports. You are not paid to show your activism.
Yeah, but I've seen a lot of influencers. You're talking about local Malaysian influencers that felt the right to express their opinion.
Especially the Palestinian issue, right?
Yes, even preachy about it and shut down all opposing views, because when people are challenging why you're looking at this and things like that, they just, I mean, either restrict your comments or they just like, nope, I'm not going to listen to all this thing. I'm going to boycott this, that. And even, I think even the way you're influencing other people's purchasing views and things like that, that is a form of influence that you exert. And I think if you're not being careful, you can just succumb to this sort of undue influence. I would say it's really an undue influence that you're exerting. I mean, you have to go back to your profession. What are you there for? I mean, you're there as an influencer to promote sales of certain things. You're not there to preach us about certain worldview, you know?
And it works both ways also, right? Because if, for example, we take the sports example, you know, like, I mean, one example that is very obvious, NBA LeBron James, he was very, very vocal about BLM. But after that, you know, I believe his personal rating and even NBA rating went down the hill. So if you want to do that, you want to promote a certain activism or boycott, people might boycott you also because I don't agree with your activism. And at the end of the day, I mean, it's a bit like what BlackRock is now facing, right? You know, the biggest fund manager in the world. They've been pushing ESG, yep. And then now you get some stake government in United States because of ESG. We're taking our superannuation, we're taking the retirement fund out from your management. So ESG, basically, I think the founder said he's going to not use the word ESG. The BlackRock founder said he's not going to use it. So you have to punish them, I guess. But one of the things now, we come back to the appeal of Trump, is really in this primary cycle, I think we see a whole new generation of voter able to see through the whole thing. Because in 2020, when Trump lost the general election, they couldn't see what was happening. But now they could see, and they are not... I think the mainstream media really have very little hold on them. To give an example, when DeSantis dropped from New Hampshire, there's still Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley lost double digit to Trump, and she get 70% of her votes from independent and Democrat. So, you know, just do your own math. The kind of support Trump has in the Republican Party is insurmountable. It's game over. That's why all the rhino, you know, rhino is just a term for those who is not aware, Republican in name only. They are basically opponent of Trump. Many of them come out and say, Trump is our nominee. Wrap up. So I just find it very interesting that time has matured the voters. And I kept thinking about what's happening in Malaysia in terms of how we process news, how we think about self-determination, because that's one of the key topic that we always talk about, right? And I think we go into the point, we say a few times already, but I think it's bear repeating, that we are so interested in the development in America because they really represented the spirit of self-determination, which I really feel is needed, not just in terms of Sarawak Sabah discussion with MN63. That's how most often you hear the word self-determination. But I guess every state, I mean, Johor is talking about Bangsar Johor and things like that. But everyone should have a level of self-determination. Like Klan Valley, KL citizen, they wanted local election because we don't have state government to manage our land, water and resources. So it is good to understand what that is, whether that is something you can appreciate or not. Because I think in some episode we say most people in Malaysia just want to vote once every 5 years and then kind of like, I don't want to be involved anymore. But then when things are screwed up, then they'll go to coffee shop and complain here and there. But let's talk about self-determination right now, right? And I just give you some background in terms of the recent primary. Because New Hampshire, I didn't know that. I didn't know that this little colony, it was one of the original 13 colony from the New England, you know, pretty near Massachusetts, those area. And it is considered the most independent of all the state. And that's why, you know, I think 1 year the Democrat primary, Sanders had more votes than Hillary. And that sort of pushed the momentum. In fact, Sanders should have been the nominee in 2016. But then at some point, they kind of bribed him out. Now, of course, the Democrats might not agree. But basically, after that, you look at his tax return, he got two or three houses and things like that. He got a few million. In the end, Bernie Sanders was bought for less than $5 million. I mean, it was an insult to his voter supporter, but that's besides the point. But New Hampshire, very independent-minded, and they are the one who come out with this kind of slogan, a quite famous slogan, let live or die, which is basically, if there's no freedom, it's better to die. You know, during the Revolution War, they are the one who come out with this slogan, which I always find it very interesting in terms of local election. We don't have local election. No taxation without representation. If we don't have representation in local election, you shouldn't charge us assessment. That's basically the argument, right? You shouldn't tax me if I have no say in how you manage my tax. So, very interesting that in such an independent-leaning liberal state, Trump is getting record number. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about self-determination. Then I think we can. I mean, I know we wanted to talk more about Trump's position, but somehow it kind of come back to Malaysia, right? So, I mean, we talk about self-determination in context of independence. I think before the show, I sort of say, look, I fully agree. I mean, if we look at MS63, and even immediately after Singapore left, remember in the Sarawak State Assembly, Ong Kin Hui and all these people already say, look, we should have the right to determine our own fate. There was always argument, and they pointed to MS63 as the basis for that. But of course, over a period of time, MS63 was not enshrined into Malaysian constitution. We should have had a new constitution, but instead, we follow the Malaya 1957 constitution. But anyway, I want to ask your opinion in terms of self-determination. I mean, we had this discussion many, many times. I know your position. I know your position is that independence is still very far away because people are just not ready in that. But where do you think we can go in terms of self-determination? I mean, what's the next logical step? Because independence might be, I don't know, you know, it's like at the end of the day, you have to consider whether it's better to be together or not. But we're not even getting there yet, right?
But we haven't even had a discussion yet.
yeah, but I mean, you do have a small group of very passionate people who felt we could be better on our own. I mean, I respect the opinion, but generally, I felt like the self-determination understanding is on there. But where do you think we can go in terms of, Undi 18, is it a progression in self-determination?
Yeah, I mean, most definitely. I mean, I think one of the biggest breakthrough that Undi 18 gave was really, I think it's really the sort of freedom that you give to your people, and especially in not thinking that your people are too stupid to make the determination, to make the right sort of determination. I mean, rightly or wrongly, people should be given a voice of what they represent. I think it's really like what you were saying, that there should be no taxation without representation. Mm. I think it's really a break away from thinking, hey, you're too young, you can't make any sort of decision. But 18 years old, you are properly educated, you have the means, the access to all the media, even the legacy from the older generations, and you could begin to think and really just begin to ponder what do you want the pathway for Malaysia to be like. Mm. So I think it's really a breakthrough in on its own. I mean, yes, maybe some politicians were expecting certain sorts of results and not getting it because it's such an independent voice that they are representing.
Not even politicians. I think some voters, right? And, you know, I tend to see the urban Pakatan Rakyat, Pakatan Harapan voter, they were somewhat disappointed because they thought the youth vote will go into the opposition. But it's not so straightforward, right? Because whenever we talk about voting, and yes, there are years of legacy issue, but at the end of the day, democracy is really about consensus. So if I have very strong concern about cultural issue, religious issue, then we have to find out what's the best way to deal with it. I mean, it's like a lot of people blame Undi 18 for the rise of the green wave, for example. But of course, I think we have seen the data. It's not the Undi 18. It is still more localized. It's still more regionalized, because when you have a power that is, I mean, we talk about Barisan Nasional, UMNO, when that power diminishes, there's a vacuum. So Undi 18 just happened to be there. And we have seen, right, I mean, even in many democracy, the different age, you know, if you're single, you are young, generally speaking, you tend to be more radical in your approach. Then when you're getting married, you settle down, you have children, then you start to think about, oh, maybe, you know, like Bill Clinton's slogan, it's the economic stupid, you know, that's his election slogan. So I think in a functional democracy, there should be room for both. So if people want to go for radical thing, that's their right, I guess. But at the end of the day, what is the consensus? And I think that's the understanding of self-determination, that you are responsible for that. But we want more responsibility, right? I mean, Undi 18 is great. We want local elections. We want, I don't know, more things.
Yeah, I guess one of the first step is, I mean, going back to Sarawak, for example, they want autonomy in health sector.
Mm.
I think that's a great idea.
Yep.
I mean, it could go very, very bizarre seeing how they manage the COVID. Yeah, I mean, the infectious disease. But it could also turn out to be a very, very good move, because the public health industry has been overburdened, overwhelmed with a lot of requests, and yet you don't really get the sort of budget that is even sufficient, I think.
Yeah, when the discussion started to center around, you know, Sarawak want autonomy in education, in health, and, you know, like you, I was immediately brought to their, you know, COVID management, which wasn't that great. But in considering the whole holistic approach, I think I'm still in favor of that. And just let them try, you know, because that's one. I mean, with self-determination, you can really screw up for a while. But ultimately, you take responsibility. And yeah, of course, they will say that Sabah is the original nation joining. But we want to decentralize the federal government further. But you can imagine the politician will not be too thrilled, right? Because Prime Minister office is really the center of all political and financial power.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of a mature democracy, right? The freedom, the self-control to exercise refrain from exerting even more control. I mean, even just like looking at Singapore, for instance, I mean, if certain things are, certain behavior are so great, why do you need to impose fine to get people to
It's a fine
comply?
Country, right?
Yeah, it is a wordplay.
I mean, that's a joke, right?
Yeah, but the thing is, you should have the freedom to let people, I mean, the Americans like this slogan as well, live and let live. I mean, basically, you should be able to tolerate, if you want to be able to bombard certain opinions, you should be able to tolerate other opposing opinions as well. So that's the beauty of democracy. As in, I think the spirit of self-determination is really the fundamental of democracy. If it's a mature democracy, if it's a healthy democracy, you don't get mob rule. You don't get, like, just because certain politician voices are louder.
Yep.
And it's not like the citizens' voices don't matter. So I think that's really, the politicians are the representation of the people. So what do the people want at the end of the day? So the freedom to exercise certain freedom, certain religion practices, or, I mean, because we are just talking about how Malaysia is so culturally diversified, that yes, while the Queen of England, the King of England are literally the head of Church of England, but in Malaysia, it's quite different because you have so many different kind of races whereby the culture and the faith is almost inseparable. How do you navigate through in this sort of scenario in Malaysia?
And that's what we talk about, right? You know, what does it mean for Islam to be official religion? I know people don't really want to talk about that. But in context of MA63, I remember seeing a very, very clear clause saying freedom of religion. And that's one of the criteria for Sabah, Sarawak, Singapore to join. There must be freedom of religion. So when you have, you know, rules and convention, yeah, you can say constitutional amendment or whatever, that must require the head of state to be of certain religion. Yes, I understand from historical point of view, certain states are in that kind of place, but surely not Sabah, Sarawak and Singapore. So these are the things that was enshrined in MA63 that allows a new nation to be formed based on self-determination, but the whole thing just screw up there. So from that point of view, I really feel like I can understand where the independent-leaning people are coming from, because it's like, what's the point when one side is not honoring the covenant? But of course, you know, it goes with the whole discussion. You know, are the people sufficiently wrapped in the process of self-determination that they will choose the right thing to do? So those are just, you know, interesting questions that you know, I think in days to come, there will be more things to discuss. But anyway, we come back to Trump, right? And we just want to kind of wrap up because, someone have said that, look, America is entering into general election cycle. I mean, where do you get a one-year campaign for general election? It doesn't happen anywhere. But just the way he wrap out the primary, I think they're in that cycle. And now maybe we can just end with this, and I'll start first. You know, what are you looking forward to in this general election cycle? Now for me, it's really what is the Democrat Party going to do? Because they seem to be stuck with Joe Biden. And if you have been following the development, he needed a lot of help to get out, get down. He needed teleprompter. I'm not sure he can survive general election, as in physically. And with 11 months to general election, how can you bring another candidate? Because their strategy has always been, let's try to take Trump out. Let's support DeSantis, Haley, all those people. All these options are out already. So they try to took his name out from the ballot, and that's a different discussion. That failed. They try to charge him, but all the legal cases seem to stop because the Supreme Court basically ruled that you can't expedite, go through the normal process. They want this to be super expedited, and the Supreme Court said no. So I'm really curious to see where they go. Are they going to stick with Biden? That would be my guess. And I don't know, you know, unless there's a massive cheating, Trump is going to win this easily. So that's really what I'm looking forward to. What about you?
Well, I think one of the very first interesting thing that I observed was there's a lot of U-turn. I mean, you see a lot of U-turns in Malaysia. That is super common. But in United States, it's almost unthinkable, I guess. But just seeing how the United what's it called? UAW?
The Automobile Union, yeah.
United Auto Workers, right?
Yeah, Auto Worker, yeah, correct.
Yeah, the president did a U-turn so drastically.
Just a few days later.
Yes. First, they endorse President Biden.
Yeah.
Secondly, they say, oh, well, actually, maybe a lot of the union workers are going to support Trump. Anyway, so it's really interesting because it's ACA. Look, let me be clear about this. A great majority of our members will not vote for President Biden. Yes, some will, but the reality of this. So what's interesting is that Fain, the president, actually said the majority of our members are going to vote with their paychecks.
Mm.
They're going to vote for an economy that works for them. So I'm actually very, very interested to see how Malaysia is going to glean really that sort of insight from what President Trump has done for the United States during his presidency. And really, that gives us a great glimpse and great hope of really how can you make a nation great again? Mm. I mean, even in such a broken covenant that we observe in Malaysia, whereby you have various contention, like Sarawak wanting to leave Malaysia or even Johor wanting to have more determination on their own, how are they going to work through together in all these sort of things? Are they going to have like be humble enough to like just do a U-turn and really just go for an economy that works for the people? So, and also the dismantling of the donor class, which Trump did so beautifully with the New Hampshire, especially in New Hampshire's primary. And it's just so interesting because it's such a huge contrast between him and Nikki Haley. One is fully supported by the northern class, and yet one is really like a lot of the citizens that are really just giving him the donation. That I think that shows that there's a break away from what the media is trying to tell them. And really, I mean, kudos to, I mean, just the beginning of it, the Elon Musk, what he did with X, liberating the opposing views from both sides. I think that's really what is very, very interesting in this election cycle. I think I'm definitely more hopeful. I don't think it's going to be like a fake red wave that is coming. But this time it's going to be like the base is really energized. I think it goes to Democrat as well, that they are really awakened to see, hey, actually, how come we're not having the Democratic primaries that we're supposed to have? Right? Those sort of things. And it's just so interesting to see the dismantling of these sort of things. And you begin to think, hey, how would it be like for Malaysia if we were able to break away from like the controls of GLC?
Yep.
The controls from, I mean, even you talk about those local councils, the head of local councils, where you can't even elect them. But how are we going to break away from this? I think America really demonstrated that sort of model, and especially with the fact that President Trump is not beholden to donor class. I think that's really a great example to have, that you need to be super successful in what you're doing that so well that, I mean, yes, there are going to be like a lot of attacks against you, yet still rising up ever stronger than before.
Yeah, as you were just saying, all these things, it just come. I was reminded about Trump and what he said, right? He said, on day one, if I win again, I'm going to close the border and I'm going to drill for more oil. And both are expression of self-determination, because you have to secure your own border so that non-citizen cannot come and just take your resources. I mean, do you want non-citizen, our neighbor from other countries in ASEAN, to come and take all the resources in Malaysia? No, you don't want. And you want, you know, when you talk about energy dependent in US, it's really talking about economic independence. And it's like we want our economy to be so strong that we are not beholden on the export market, we are not beholden on what's happening in China and things like that. Yes, there are big players that are going to impact us. We are a small nation, but we're still a major petroleum producer. We are still, you know, we're still in a position where we can carve out a level of a level of independence and self-sustaining in terms of economy. So I just kind of think that, look, this is something that we can learn, and how the new administration is going to do that. And now, of course, we the political class here is more lean more towards socialism, but I also feel there are enough political leaders that want an economic resurgence. I think they want that, but how you use the funding, how you use the revenue is another question. But well, you have to increase the revenue first, then we talk about how we spend. So I think that's all the time we have for today. I mean, it's kind of interesting. We going out different area. And our listeners and viewers, if you have any particular issue that you want us to talk about, I mean, the topic of America is always one of our side interests. We kind of do quite a lot. It's not the majority of the time here, but we do have special interests because we don't find people doing this kind of thing here. And hopefully we just give you a perspective that maybe intrigue your mind that will cause you to read a bit more. So I think until next time.
Yep.
Okay, bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.